From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. There's a creative and fun new record out by the lead singer and frontman of Sigur Rós, Jan Thor Bergesen. The record is called Jansi. Back in January, when Bergesen was in New York City, I asked him to play DJ for us. I wondered what such an ethereal singer and dramatic songwriter would choose. And as is often the case with these DJ shows, I was surprised. We went from Iron Maiden to Django Reinhardt. I also play some of his new record for him, and we talk about that. Jan Thor Bergesen went to our New York bureau, which overlooks the Empire State Building. I was in a studio in Washington, D.C., listening to one of his picks when I pulled up the fader and found him there a bit early. From high atop the Triangle Towers. Anybody home in New York?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good. Well, you'd be the right person.
I think so.
How are you? My name's Bob Boylan.
Oh, yeah, I'm really good.
Good.
A nice, beautiful, sunny day in New York.
Isn't that view great from that building?
Yeah, it's really nice.
I go there sometimes when I'm in New York and just stare out that window.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I grew up in New York. I grew up in Brooklyn and lived in apartment buildings. And you'd always see out the window, always see the Empire State Building. Going to the bureau and seeing it so up close is just a great thing. Did you grow up in a musical home? Was music like important to your mom and your dad?
No, not in that sense. They played a lot of music, had some record collection, but neither of them play instruments or sing or anything like that.
What do you remember around the house when you were little?
I remember vinyls. I remember maybe when I was 9, my first memory of music was me listening to music was when I was playing the Beatles, on double speed.
Why double speed?
I don't know. It just was more fun when you were younger. More action.
Have you done that lately?
No. I just play everything slow now.
What about radio? What was radio like in Iceland? You're born in the mid-70s, so we're talking early 80s, being 8 or 9. Am I right about
yeah.
that? Yeah. Okay, so what was radio like growing up?
The classic 80s songs.
Is that what your folks listened to? Were they rockers or?
Yeah, they were kind of. I found one vinyl album that my mother owned with Black Sabbath. So I thought it was really impressive.
Which one? Do you remember?
No, there was the first one. Yeah. What's it called?
I think it was self-titled. Just, but I could be
yeah,
wrong.
Black Sabbath. Yeah. yeah. So that was really impressive, I thought.
What about saving up money, going to a store and buying something? Do you remember ever doing that as a kid?
Buying music?
Yeah, buying your first song.
Yeah, I don't remember it that well, actually. Because my cousin used to collect vinyls, and when I was younger, I used to kind of grow up with heavy metal when I was growing up. I remember my cousin used to own all the vinyls, you know, so I just went to him and listened to vinyls.
So what would be something you'd go to your cousin's house? What's your cousin's name?
His name is Ate.
And what would Ate play for you that you could remember from back then?
Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden.
He was playing it.
Well, I don't know why I'm laughing. I'm sorry.
What the hell?
No. Yeah, exactly.
No, I laugh also. I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
We used to meet in my room, and that was the first time when I was kind of learning electric guitar. My father brought me home electric guitar.
How old were you then?
13. Uh-huh. So that was super exciting, and I plugged it into my stereo system, and I played with Iron Maiden. There's one song called "Murders in the Rumor," which I used to play with, you know, and we would try to, you know, learn.
That's great. You mind if I play that? That's one of the songs you like. This is Murders in Rue de Morgue is the name of this. I don't remember what Iron Maiden record this was on, but this probably was.
It's on Killers.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I should have known you'd know.
It's so brutal, everything.
you want to introduce this Iron Maiden tune then for us?
Should I do it?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Iron Maiden with Murders in the Rumor.
Thank you for putting a smile on my face.
I know. It's amazing. Wow.
Do you remember what attracted you to this group? Your cousin, obviously, but, you know, your cousin probably played a lot of things, and this is the one you take, what, 20-something years later and remember?
I haven't heard this song, actually, for many, many years.
Should I bring it back up here?
Yeah. Yeah! It's really good.
Yeah.
So much energy in it. I think that's what attracted me in the beginning. When you're a young teenager, you know, of course, you know, if you hear music like this, so much energy and, like, you know, power in it.
And drama, a lot of drama.
A lot of drama. Yeah. I remember the singer in this band, Bruce Dickinson, he was a history, like, major, so all these lyrics was about, like, some history moments.
Yeah, I didn't catch all the words to this song. It talks about Paris, and do you know what this song's about?
I have no clue.
That's fine. It's probably just as well.
Exactly.
What did your dad buy a guitar for you? Because you asked him, or do you remember?
Yeah, I started learning. My parents gave me, when I probably was 9 or 10, they gave me acoustic guitar, small acoustic guitar, and they gave me this guitar lesson. I don't know why, actually. And I took this lesson for maybe half year guitar, and I hated it. It was just the worst thing in my life. My hands hurt, and, like, I went to this really boring teacher, and, like, it was terrible. And then I just gave that up, and it wasn't until a few years later my father, some of his co-workers, like, he bought this guitar from his co-worker, and gave it to me, and that was really exciting.
This is a guitar and an amplifier, I take it?
That was only guitar, oh. Actually. I didn't have an amplifier for maybe 10 years or something.
Oh, my gosh.
I just got to, like, you know, plug it in with some of my friends' amplifiers.
And you started to teach yourself then?
Yeah, I guess so. I think the reason why I started writing my own songs was because I was so bad in playing other people's songs, I guess. You know, when you're young, you start to play other people's songs, but it's just, I thought it was so boring, so...
I think some people have a real penchant for being able to do that, to being here somebody else's song and then figure it out.
Exactly.
I did a guitar when I was a teenager, too, and actually the music teacher told my mother that I had absolutely no musical abilities at all.
That's nice.
And that's right. And I totally gave it up and then picked up music 10 years later. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's different parts of the brain that work different ways, and some can take and digest and spit it back out, and other people are just need to figure it out for themselves, and you sound like one of those people. You've picked something that surprised me in this list, Moon River.
Yeah, Audrey Hepburn.
This is Audrey Hepburn from the movie A Breakfast at Tiffany's. Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you first hear this?
A few years ago, I was watching this movie with my boyfriend, and this song came on. We were just both like, what the hell, why haven't you heard this before? This recording is also, like, I think unbelievable. It was so, like, scratchy, and it's amazing. I think
the movie version of this is Audrey Hepburn. She's sitting on a fire escape, right?
Yeah.
And singing this song, Moon River, which is a river in Georgia, Savannah, doesn't matter, but so she's singing there with an acoustic guitar, and it's this beautiful moment. I don't think that version ever made it on the original soundtrack. I think the one we have came out on Henry Mancini's Music is what this is.
Okay.
So let's play it. You can acknowledge and tell me whether it's the right version or not, and then we'll go from there.
That's amazing. That's the right version.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm crossing you in style someday. Old dream maker, you heart breaker, wherever you're going, I'm going your way. See the world, there's such a lot of world to see. We're after the same rainbows end, waiting round the bend. My huckleberry friend, Moon River.
It's a beautiful Mancini orchestration.
Amazing. I love the last chord also.
Okay, let's listen.
Really weird last
yes,
chord.
Yes,
it's amazing though.
Yeah.
Really cool.
I understand that they were going to take that song out of the movie, you know, use the theme that, you know, weaves, but they were going to take Audrey Hepburn's version out of it. And I think she said something to the effect of, I'll say this in polite English, which is over my dead body, in essence, is what she said.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good to
and
be done.
That's right, because I guess she knew this. It was a great moment in the movie.
Did you know if he did something else, like sung more? Or
I don't know that.
Interesting to know.
Would be, actually. I mean, I hadn't thought about this song in this version for absolute ages. I'm so glad you brought it to the table here. Is it its simplicity that attracts you to something like this? The string arrangements? What is it?
I think maybe it's the shortness of the song. It's really short.
Yeah, 2 minutes.
Her voice is amazing. It's not like rehearsed, or it's not like perfect. It's kind of like fragile versions, you know. And the sound, of course, is amazing. I'm kind of like a sound geek when it comes to recording and stuff. So, like her vocal sound is so like really mid-rangey and like present, but still really warm and full. So, I really like.
When you go ahead and record these days, I mean the variety of things you can choose to put your stuff onto is huge, because you could do the digital. You could go and dig up some old analog gear. You could do a hybrid of the two. What do you like to do, or is it depend on the song you're doing?
No, I think it's maybe a mixture of both. Uh-huh. Like when I record at home, I have a good microphones, old tube microphones, and preamps also, like tube preamps and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I record on computer, because it's getting better and better. I really, really like tape kind of the most, but something about computer as a like a control station is so easy to handle stuff and change it, and I really like to play around with recordings, move things, and like, you know, reverse and slow things down and stuff like that. So it's an interesting playground, computer.
And of course all that stuff you could do on tape before, but it sure is a lot easier.
It's a lot easier with computers.
When I came here to NPR, we cut all our interviews and everything on tape until, you know, like maybe it's 10 years now, but not much more. I still have boxes of razor blades here if you ever need any.
Exactly.
And grease pencils and all.
It was kind of talent to also to cut tapes and splice tapes and stuff.
It's a rare skill.
Yeah, a skill, I mean. It's a special skill to do it.
Well, I'll just say this, which is that we cut news interviews a lot here, right? And so you'd wind up taking a 20-minute interview, or maybe an interview like this, an hour interview, and you'd cut it down to 8 or 10 minutes. And then, you know, the person who you cut the interview for might say, you know that part where they said something about the horse? Can you get that? And you go through your trash can and you just start pulling out things and rubbing it across the tape head, you know?
That's crazy.
And you'd be doing that usually on deadline, too.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's fun. It's fun.
Yeah.
I'd like to play something of yours. This is from the new record. New record's called Go. For those just tuning in, I'm talking with Jansi Bergesen. And did I say your name right? Because I'm just off.
No.
No, good. Okay. My apologies.
No problem.
So do it for me and then I'll...
My name is actually not Jansi. It's Jon Thor. I have two names. And my last name is Bergesen.
And is it just a friendship thing that people say?
It's like a nickname.
Okay. So I'm here with Jon Thor Bergesen. Is that
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah,
and I'm talking in particular about the records that he's bringing to the table here, playing DJ on All Songs Considered. But he has a new record called Go, and on that is a song called Animal Arithmetic I'd like to play. Couple of questions. I was curious when I heard it. The first thing I thought was, I bet the frenetic nature of the music inspired the words. So, chicken or egg here? Which came first on this song, the words or the music?
For me, music always comes first.
Always.
It's just kind of my nature. Writing music comes quite natural, but writing words is harder, I think. Feel so naked with words.
Self-conscious about it.
Yeah. But music is just something unspeakable and invisible. Something in the air you grab from the air, and you know, you make mold it into a song, and you can't explain why. Mm-hmm. But words are so like touchable or something.
Do you like listening to your own stuff? I know this. That's probably a hard question, because answering yes would might make you sound like you really love your own stuff, and that's all you go around. But I mean. Here, I just played a couple of minutes of your song, and I was just wondering if you know, how you feel listening to your own stuff like that.
It's all right. It's kind of new for me, so it's all right. But no, I never listen to my old albums, for example. I'm kind of that kind of character who I'm just like to do what I'm doing like right now, and it's really hard for me to, you know, go back and listen to old stuff that I've been doing and. I can't just listening to it now, because I've just recently finished the album, so I've been mixing and stuff, so I've been listening to it like 100 times. So
now, for those who've never made a record, I think one of the great things about making a record is about a month later to go and listen, because in the middle of it, it really becomes hard, doesn't it, to discern what's the right direction, what if it sounds good anymore. You can hardly sleep because it goes, am I putting words in your head? You can't sleep because it goes through your head all the time.
Yeah, so you get a little bit fright in your brain of all this. Well, you know, you listen to the same song over and over and over again, and you feel like maybe there's something missing, and you're like, try to, you know, search for anything that would fit in the song. And also, I think for me, basically, like, these kind of these songs, in their core, they're just like pop songs. Basic songs structure, and I'm really into like producing and arranging songs to make it more interesting. So I think that's my priority when I'm in the studio. Like, I love accidents and mistakes in the studio, and I like to keep that if possible.
Do you ever take the core of the song, that is the pop part of the song, and just take it out?
Yeah, for example, this song was written on acoustic guitar.
Okay.
And fairly just right before I went to the studio. Then I record my guitar when I went to the studio, then I record drums and then strings and brass, and and kind of all kind of overdubs and voice and stuff. And then in the end, when it mixed, we just took the, you know, acoustic guitar out, which is quite nice. You know, that's kind of was the main structural instrument to begin with. So it's quite nice just to take it out.
And the song still holds up, I guess, is the magic of all that stuff.
Yeah.
Speaking of the drumming on that, I love the drummer.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Who is it?
It's a Finnish guy called Samuli Kosminen. He's been playing for many years, and I've seen him play many times, and I kept him in my head for a long time because he's so inventive and like a unique drummer, and I really like inventive drummers. And he showed up to the studio just with his suitcase full of like toys and junk and trash and all kind of stuff. And yeah, he hadn't heard the songs that much before, and I just had the acoustic tracks, and we kind of didn't talk that much before, so he just came to the studio, and we had 6 days, and it was really spontaneous and creative. We kind of just threw out the ideas, and so it was really fun.
And it unfolds for you, it changes, and you hear your songs growing right before your eyes and ears. It's the journey of it, the thrill of the fun of it.
Yeah, that's actually the most of it is, I think it's the most fun thing is when you're in the studio and kind of intense session and things build quite quickly. That I think that's really satisfying.
I think that anyone who comes to your music is immediately struck by two things. One is the nature of atmospherics that are going on the record. And there's a lot of emotional content in the sound that I hear when I approach your music. So that is often the first thing that grabs me when I listen to your music. And then the other thing is your voice. I like to often sing along with records I like. I can't do that with you. What do you sing along with when you listen to music? What do you like?
Can I say Billie Holiday? I like to sing along with her. She is one of my favorite singers, I think. And there's something about her that really connects to me, I think. There's so much, what I really like about that is the recording procedure, which I'm really attracted to. And that time they just had one microphone and her, she was singing, and then a band who played with her. So they just had one microphone in a room, and then they just placed the people in different, placement from the microphone. Depends on how loud you were.
Right. You mix yourself, so to speak.
Yeah, basically, yeah. I think that's so beautiful. And it's always just one take. And it's just, I think it's really cool.
Let's listen to something. What do you want to play?
The song I really like. It's called All of Me.
Yeah. I'll leave your mic on, and if you want to sing along with Billy, I'm not going to stop you.
I'm too shy for that.
Okay.
All of me, can't you see? I'm no good without you. Take my lips, I want to lose them. Take my arms, I'll never use them. Your goodbye left me with eyes that cry. How can I go on, dear, without you? You took the part that once was my heart, so why not? All of me,
It was not a chance I was going to stop that song. Not a chance.
I know. It's so amazing. It's just like a this cotton cloud over you or something, or like dripping honey.
What would it be like to have a voice like that?
I don't know. It's so unique also.
Yeah, that's just it, isn't it? I mean, there are a lot of people come and gone who try to sing like, but have that inflection to them. But she, there's no one like her.
And also so effortless and,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, that's what it is. The castrati singers. Now, you've picked on your list. I peeked. You've picked a singer. I don't remember his name, so tell me.
Called Alessandro Morissetti. These recordings are done in 1904 in the Vatican. And I think he was one of the last castratos. At least the album it's from is called Last Castrato.
Are going to be people who don't know what a castrato is, so I could take this delicate subject or I could just leave it in your
Yeah, basically, just they cut their balls off.
Yes, okay, thank you very much. And that way they could sing, and they did that before puberty, and that, yeah, there you go. And
yeah, sing really high.
Forever. And this guy was no spring chicken when they recorded this stuff either. He was probably 50-something years old, so he was past his prime when they got these recordings done.
Yeah, I think the castratos are in their prime, like around 20-something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this guy was like, I don't know, 50 or something, so it was definitely not in his prime. And there's something so beautiful about that also. It's like this old man baby or something. It's like really weird voice.
That's what I was wondering. Is this stuff for you? How do I put this gently? Maybe I should stop trying to put things gently and just say, is this weird freak stuff, or is it actually beautiful to you?
I think it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Definitely. Really beautiful. There's something about it and his voice, which is so like, because he sings like I don't know, he doesn't sing like a woman, or because he's not in his prime anymore. So it gets kind of a little bit eerie, like mm-hmm. a little bit like weird, or like you can't put your finger on what it is. And also the recordings are so old and so like, you know, it sounds so good, and there's something so, you know, I get really attracted to that kind of stuff.
Let's play a little bit of it. And
the song is called Ave Maria.
Yes, that's my favorite version of Ave Maria.
Really good.
It is weird.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Weird and beautiful. Weird and beautiful, I think.
I know. It's like a get to see into this distant, forgotten world or something. It's like really eerie, I think.
And they would do this for to have young boys sing beautifully for a long time and for the church. Hence, this stuff is done recorded at the Vatican. the practice has stopped. In fact, it was, I think, over many hundreds of years. It wasn't looked kindly toward. What attracted you to singing in such a high falsetto? You're obviously attracted to listening to it. Which came first for you?
I think when I started singing, I started because nobody else would sing, and I started playing in a band quite young, and I just started because there was nobody else to sing, and everybody was too shy, so I just started to sing, even though I was not good. And still to this day, I kind of don't look at myself as a singer.
Oh.
I don't know why. Maybe I was kind of shy about my voice in the beginning, but now I'm really comfortable about my voice now. And of course, it's just like a muscle. Guess like the more you sing, and the better you get, obviously. And so I'm comfortable now. But you know, and I think when I was starting, I've been singing, and all of a sudden I started singing in this high falsetto, and I found it easier for some reason than singing low. I could control my voice better, and I could control my pitch better when I was singing higher. And so I kind of started singing more in high voice because I found it easier and, yeah, more natural somehow.
Is there an emotional difference between singing in a high voice? I'm just wondering from an emotional expression standpoint whether there's any difference in reaching that, in hearing that highness in your head, and in all the things that happen to you singing high.
What do you mean, different of singing high and lower?
Yeah, just from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah, it's a... when I'm singing high, it's something that resonance, maybe.
Inside of you? Resonance inside of you?
Yeah, kind of.
Is it more mournful? Is it or easier to be? I don't know.
It seems to be a little bit more, yet resonance somehow with me and my body, I think, and something that connects me somehow. But it's hard to say. I think, you know, I'm on this album, for this new album, I sing a lot in low notes also. So I just really like both, you know, all kinds of singing.
Can I play another song off the record, maybe? I don't remember what range you sing in, but I want to play this one for a couple of different reasons. This is Tornado. And if that's
kind of low register.
Okay,
song.
Good. So that would be a good reason to do it. And then the other is I want to talk about the arrangement of the strings. So folks out there, just listen to how this song's put together. And then when we come after listen to it, we'll listen to half of it or so and come back and talk about the string arrangements and how things come together in a song like this. It's called Tornado.
You grow. if I'm allowed just ever to be.
Well, like the Billie Holiday song, I couldn't just stop it halfway. So there you go. I could turn down the Iron Maiden, and I was okay with that.
It's a good sign, I guess.
Yes. Can we just briefly talk about how a song like this unfolds? First of all, do you hear some of this in your head before you start to even begin the process of recording, or does it all unfold in the process of recording?
It's hard to say.
Huh.
Yeah, obviously I write it on piano and just in my living room. And then, Nico Muli did the arrangement on it.
Did Nico Muli come in and try to work on what you had in your head then? Or did Nico Muli hear this piano and you two just battered it out and well?
Yeah, for this song, for example, I had this melody in my head, just like this super simple melody that just would just follow my voice when the strings first come in, just to exaggerate the space and the would widen out or something, if you can say that.
Yeah.
And then also he came up with kind of the rest of the arrangement, there's a strings that kind of come in and out and the brass also. This kind of that creates kind of movement in the song. So yeah, and the drums were just decided, then and there, when we were in the studio. I wanted some snare action on the song.
That worked really well, I have
yeah,
to say.
Yeah, that's really nice.
It's unexpected.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, kind of accident. Alex, my boyfriend, he helped me produce this album also.
And you worked together with him on this great project, for people who don't know, Rice Boy Sleeps project, which is record came out this summer, but then people who are fans of our show, of All Songs Considered, would have heard The Dark Was the Night soundtrack, and there's a cut from Rice Boy Sleeps, and that's you and Alex, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry.
So I'm kind of used to working with him, and he came with this offbeat hits in the song. I don't know if you noticed
him. The accents what is he playing? Is he on snare?
He plays on just bass drum and snare, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And this is offbeat. It's kind of hard to listen to, but makes it kind of weird, but works,
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot of things that happens just in the studio and accidentally, and yeah, this is how I to work.
The strings that Nico did, would you write them on paper? Would you have players in the studio?
No.
How to explain?
Nico wrote it all out, of course, and he's really quick. He works really fast, which I like. I like people who work fast. Yeah, kind of fast worker myself. So, yeah, and it's all written out, and then we got six string players. We recorded the strings first. And maybe on this song, this is maybe double, so it's maybe 12 mm-hmm. string players. And then also there's a brass, four brass guys who comes in and record. And then there's wind instruments also, so. It's kind of a lot of layers.
You did this in is this part in Connecticut? Or where did you record these?
Yeah, we recorded all the basic tracks in Connecticut with a guy called Peter Katis. Really, really good.
Peter.
Did the Last National.
Oh, the National, sure.
Yeah.
And did you meet the National folks through the Dark Was a Night project? Because the Bryce and Aaron Dessner were the ones who put that on. Is that where your connection is with the National? Or did you know that stuff before?
Yeah, I think I know them before, because I remember last tour when I was touring with Sigur Rós, we met on a lot of these festivals that we were playing together.
Oh, okay. What do you want to take us out on?
It's one of my favorite artists, guitar player called Django Reinhardt. And, him, Django Reinhardt and Billie Holiday is kind of my favorite, maybe, jazz artist. And it's kind of the only thing I listen to, maybe. It's kind of, I don't know why, but it's more like a background to my life or something than actually listening to music. I like to keep it on, and it makes me feel... It's like having a warm fireplace or something in the background. It makes it feel good or something. So this is a song called, I don't know how to say this, D-I-N-A.
Diner.
Dinah.
Dinah's a girl's name.
Okay.
That's a great song. And I think, if I remember right on this, this is Stefan Grappelli, who's he and Django Reinhardt, one of the most famous pair of musicians ever to play together. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, amazing.
Just fantastic. Thanks again. It's been a pleasure having you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right. Be well.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So I can go.
You can go, and I appreciate it a lot.
That was really fun.
Yeah,
I loved it,
fun talking to you, too.
Yeah.